This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode number 36, Secret Agent Men. Recorded March 9th, 2016.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, as you heard in the introduction, we are the Gridiron Graduates. I'm glad to have you back along with us. And if you're as tired as we are, we don't blame you, because it's certainly been a wild beginning to free agency, to say the least. My buddy Ian Wharton, I'm sure, is just as exhausted as I am. Right, Ian?
I am, and that's just the beginning of the night for me. I've got to put together who's best on the free agent market after the first day, so it's early evening still for me, but it's a fun time of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a crazy week, free agency getting underway, and for me, Selection Sunday coming up this weekend, so checking to see if any bubbles are popping. You know, like, for example, Syracuse. If you're a Syracuse fan out there, sorry. So, busy time, but definitely an exciting time. But yeah, a lot to get to today. I mean, this free agency, I mean, it feels like, you know, every free agency is crazy, but I mean, this one just felt fast and furious, didn't it? I mean, it's, you know, it's like move after move, boom, 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 right after another. Like, it's just nuts. It was crazy what's been going on.
It is. It's been a lot of fun, actually. That's for sure. And things really happened quickly, which, I mean, there's no surprise to that, really. I mean, we knew a lot of these deals before 4 o'clock. And, you know, I don't really care whether it's official or not, as far as, like, some people would say, well, okay, the deadline hit, and then it kind of slowed down there for a little while. And we knew most of the deals. Mm-hmm. We knew most of the deals early. But, you know, I enjoy it. I honestly, this is my favorite time of the year between free agency and the draft. Part of that is, you know, have a bad team that I root for. But kind of regardless of that, you know, I like seeing, first of all, I like seeing these guys get paid. I like seeing that. I like the hope, and I like the optimism that spews from the contracts, although a lot of it's misguided, and, you know, it's still fun, and that's why we enjoy the sport. That's why we love it, for that optimism. Everyone thinks that they could be a winner this time of the year, and, you know, the players, even if I don't necessarily, if I'm not a big fan of the player themselves or the money that they received as far as value, still root for them regardless. So, you know, they deserve it. They deserve that payday. So yeah, that's kind of my takeaway from the early set of free agency, at least, you know, in a very broad and very general sense of my free agency take.
But before we get into a lot of the moves that have gone on, I think we should go back to the beginning of the week, because certainly that's where a lot of the news started. The big news, of course, Peyton Manning officially hung up his cleats. He announced his retirement at a press conference on Monday. We knew that decision day was coming because, you know, with the league year coming, Denver was probably going to cut him anyway. But at least he gets to go out on his own terms. They were able to honor him. And it's very surreal now to think now that we're now in an NFL without Peyton Manning. I mean, you know, we knew it was going to happen. We all expected it after the Super Bowl win. But just the fact that it has happened and he's no longer in the NFL is just pretty crazy to think. You know, it's like, you know, Derek Jeter retiring, or a lot of these big name athletes in whatever sport, you know, hanging it up. But we've certainly been blessed and honored to have seen such a great career, and to have watched one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, you know, without a doubt, obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer, come 2021. So it's definitely you know, we definitely wish him well, and it was definitely a fun ride for the sheriff.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You know, it's in, I talked about this earlier in the season. It was hard to watch him not being the Peyton Manning that we knew for so long. He, growing up, obviously, with him, he was just like one of those guys. It's hard to overstate how good he was. And so he changed the game. He changed the game for the good of for fans and also, I think, players. You kind of listen to reporters ask about or talk about how guys didn't really take it as serious until they saw how seriously he was taking it as far as studying the game and his dedication to his craft. And now everyone studies film just like a madman. And so, you know, I'm not a big fan of how Peyton went out as far as his, you know, post-game speech and even his press conference at the end there. I just didn't really think we're, I don't know, really fitting for a guy with that type of history and stature in the league. But regardless of that, you know, I'm glad he went out how he went. He didn't drag it out. He could have come back. He could have played another season, I think, for especially for the Broncos, especially as, and, you know, we'll get into the free agency news, but, you know, I think he could have come back and played. Maybe he could have played for like the Rams or someone, but I'm glad he went out how he went out. That's the proper way, quite frankly. And, you know, it'll be really weird to watch football without him. He's a great player. Excited to see what he does next.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, if he ends up getting, say, a front office position, that'd be pretty fun. Maybe follow in the steps of John Elway and become a GM or something somewhere, maybe with the Titans, you know, where he, you know, where he played college, or maybe, I don't know. I look forward to see what his next football move is.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And then, as if that wasn't enough, as far as retirements go, Calvin Johnson retires. And we knew that he had been going back and forth on retirement a little bit since the end of the season. And this is another one of those, you know, we'll believe it when we see it type scenarios. But he made his announcement. And again, it's just, you know, and it's even more surprising for Calvin because he's only 30 years old. But you can tell that he was kind of slowing down a bit. You know, I think he played all 16 games last season, but he was still kind of bothered a little bit, you can tell. So, I don't know, maybe he just felt his body wasn't up to it anymore. And, you know, again, it's just crazy to think that a top player, of, you know, the caliber of Calvin Johnson just decided to walk away at such a young age. And I don't know what it is now about Detroit, but this is now the second time, at least in, you know, our recent memory, that they've had a great player retire at such a young age. You had Barry Sanders walk away at 31. Now you have Calvin at 30. But yeah, to not see Calvin in Detroit is, again, it's going to be really weird to see come next season.
Yeah, no doubt about that. To me, he was the guy that really changed, again, how we view the position. And we didn't have many 6'6", 240-pound receivers running a 4.3. Not just running fast, but he was literally the most elite athlete in a league full of just incredible athletes. Like, he was the guy. He and J.J. Watt are, like, the two freakiest guys in the NFL. Von Miller's up there, too. And he's the gold standard. So, you know, I'm going to really miss him. I loved watching him. he was a guy that, like, he was partially why I began doing the cornerback studies that I do. He was one of the influences because, like, you'd see guys with really good coverage on him, and he would just go over the top and just take the ball out of their hands. And it's just like, we really shouldn't be clowning on cornerbacks that, like, when dudes do that. And so that really influenced me. I wish we would have, and I was talking about this with a coworker today, I wish we would have seen him in, like, a spread offense in college. Like, imagine if he went to, like, Baylor or Texas Tech. Like, what would he have done as opposed to, you know, obviously Georgia Tech, where it wasn't, like, as option heavy as it is now, but it was still a conservative offense. And imagine if he would have gone to the NFL with, like, a really good quarterback instead of Matt Stafford, who's, you know, pretty much like an average quarterback. I wish we could have seen him in better situations in college and the NFL. And, you know, that's not to say he didn't put up an amazing career, because he, to me, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. If you look at his production per game, I don't even think it's a question. And sad to see him go early. On the other hand, I'm happy to see him go out with good health, and certainly respect the decision. You know, again, just like Peyton, it's going to be really weird not watching him.
Yeah, so, boy, all these retirements this season certainly sets up for a potential strong Hall of Fame class in 2021. We've got Peyton Manning, probably first ballot. Calvin Johnson, first ballot. Marshawn Lynch will be eligible. Jared Allen's eligible. So there's some good names under consideration starting in 2021. So we'll move on. I think we definitely now have to talk about the trade that was, then almost wasn't, then what was again, and finally made official, the deal between the Eagles and the Dolphins that sent Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso to the Dolphins. And in a stunning move to me, because of, you know, them moving Byron Maxwell's contract to Miami, they actually swapped picks in the first round, which I thought was amazing. You know, to move up 5 spots in the first round, sending a corner like Byron Maxwell with all that money left on his contract, I thought was highway robbery by Howie Roseman. Of course, it almost didn't happen because there was talk that the Dolphins were concerned about Maxwell's shoulder, so they took a look at that. But I guess they eventually gave him the green light with a shoulder and gave the trade the green light. So there it is. Maxwell was an Eagle, then he was a Dolphin, then partially an Eagle again. Now he's finally with the Dolphins. And I'm sure you have quite the take on this one.
Yeah, I actually like this deal for both sides. I thought it made sense for both teams. It's not much to give up. So from Miami's perspective, you know, they lost, and we'll get into these guys, they lost Olivier Vernon, they lost Lamar Miller, who count against, or count for them for the compensatory picks. So Miami, they filled two holes with this trade, and they still keep their first round pick. They don't lose any picks. They just moved down a couple spots. The value of that trade is basically a high third round pick. So Miami didn't, you know, get great value on this trade, but they did get a starting cornerback. They did get, you know, a starting linebacker. Whether Alonzo's healthy or not, we'll see. We'll see what he ends up being, this year for Miami. But, you know, Miami wanted to add talent at that linebacker position. So as of right now, they're going to lose Rishard Matthews as well. They lost, Derek Shelby. So right now they're in order to get 3 full compensatory picks, so they can make a signing for free, and then any other signings after that, then they'll just it'll count against their compensatory picks, but which is fine. But, you know, Miami needed to it sucks that they lost a couple of those guys, but I'm just sticking with this trade. Miami needed to find a guy like Maxwell, because Maxwell and Philly obviously struggled, I think, at the beginning, at the end, and then at the end of the season. I think for a while there, he was actually doing a good job. I think during the middle of the season, he was a solid player. They struggled there again at the end. It was a big jump for him. He was a cover three, cover four corner in Seattle, goes to a man scheme, and follows around top receivers. It's not who he was. He was never that guy. Prior to Philly getting him. So, I think that Miami's situation fits him a lot better. They're going to play a lot of zone. They're going to play a lot of cover two, cover three, cover four. Plays into his strengths. This allowed Miami to get younger, longer at the position. Allowed them to move away from Brent Grimes, who was a PR nightmare because of his wife, and then also as an aging player, he just wasn't good anymore. And they can easily move on from Maxwell if they don't restructure his contract, which it's rumored that they will. But if they don't, they can just cut him after 2016 for pennies on the dollar. The way his contract was structured is actually a pretty good structure. So, I like the trade for Miami. Obviously, I like it for Philadelphia. They're kind of hitting the reset button on last offseason, and they deserve credit for pulling the plug. I personally would have made it work with Maxwell. He's a good cornerback. People like to trash him because of the contract. Contract is actually fairly palatable, especially as we're seeing today. There's a lot of money being spent, and we'll get into some of those deals. But overall, I liked it for both sides. Obviously, Philly now gets the top 10 pick. They get out of a couple big contracts, and they avoid paying Kiko Alonso moving forward. And again, definitely a win for Miami, because now they get two defensive starters for a pretty good price, and they still stay with a top 13 pick, which actually for them works out pretty well, because I don't think anybody at 8 would have made a difference for Miami. And so I think 13 is a pretty similar range for Miami's needs. I think that's actually going to be a little bit more comfortable for them as far as what they're looking for.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Eagles getting out of a couple contracts. They were even able to move DeMarco Murray's contract, which was also surprising. We talked before on the show about, the possibility that they could have got rid of him, but I thought it was more likely he was just going to stay, because I didn't think they were going to get much for him. They end up shipping him to Tennessee and actually moved up in the fourth round as part of that deal. So I think now this means the Eagles will have the second pick on day three, because I think Cleveland will have the first pick in the fourth round there. But so the Eagles get rid of Murray's contract. He goes to Tennessee, which I think is not a bad landing spot for him. He'll probably be the featured back there, but at least you can still sprinkle in David Cobb. They re-signed Antonio Andrews. If they go ahead and draft Laremy Tunsil at the first pick, which seems to be kind of a consensus thought right now, then you've got two very good bookend tackles in him and Taylor Lewan to help open holes. They signed Ben Jones from the Texans, a solid center. You've got Chance Warmack, who's one of my favorite guards in the league. All of a sudden, you're building a solid offensive line, and you have a decent running game, all in the hopes of protecting Marcus Mariota, which is priority number one for Tennessee. So it works out there for the Titans. And again, for the Eagles, they move up in the pit, move up in the draft. So, they didn't gain any picks, but they are in a little bit better position now as far as the draft goes, because they still have, now they have a top 10 pick in the draft. They have a high pick in round one. They still have the 2-3s. Still don't have a second rounder, but, the way they've been making moves lately, I can certainly see them having a pick in the second round at some point between now and during the draft. So not a bad trade, either way, but again, definitely an excellent job by Howie Roseman to get out of a couple contracts and put themselves in a little bit of a better position going forward this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, like we mentioned, I'm actually surprised they were able to get anything. Now it's a very minor value. I mean, we're talking like less than a seventh-round pick. But that's okay. They saved money by trading him instead of cutting him. And that was really the key. Less of a cap hit by doing that. Again, lets them start over from last season and gives them that space to kind of do what they please. They need to give some big extensions out. Fletcher Cox, obviously, is going to be the guy that we're going to be talking about over summer and probably in the next year about, you know, how much money is he going to get now.
Yeah.
He's the next guy that's going to get major cash. So I like it. Again, it's just getting what you can for, you know, getting any type of asset at all. In total, they probably got the equivalent of a third round pick and a seventh round pick for three players that they just didn't have any plans for. And so, hey, that's a win. In the NFL, usually once they know that you're trying to move someone, it usually becomes a situation where they're just waiting for you to cut them. Howie didn't do that. He got some value for his guys that, now granted, they're decent football players. I know that like the common thing is, well, if he's not good, then he sucks. I mean, these were good players. I think in the right situation, especially Maxwell and Murray can be good players. I think Murray's going to be pretty good for Tennessee. But he wasn't the right fit in Philly, and that's okay. They saw their mistake. They moved on from him. So it'll be interesting to see here moving forward what else they're able to do. I know that they made a couple signings, but overall I like these trades for both teams, both parties involved. These were deals that made sense.
Mm-hmm. So now let's get into the craziness that was the free agent signings. Obviously, you know, a lot of these deals were reported on Tuesday, I guess, because, of course, the legal tampering period, which, by the way, the Kansas City Chiefs got busted for from last season with Jeremy Maclin. I guess they had illegal contact, I guess, directly with Maclin, which, of course, is a big no-no in the NFL. So they were actually docked their third rounder this year and, what did they say, seventh rounder, I think, in 2017. So Roger Goodell and Troy Vincent wagging that finger like the Kempe Mutombo. No. But yeah, like Ian mentioned earlier, a lot of money flying around, which is to be expected. You know, salary cap's constantly rising, so these teams are going to have money to spend. And one of those teams was the Jacksonville Jaguars, who went out and got arguably the top free agent on the market in Malik Jackson, who leaves the Super Bowl champion Broncos, but, you know, probably following the money a little bit. But the Jags went out, they targeted Jackson to help their interior line. They had the money to spend, so I like the move I like some of the moves Jacksonville's been making. I think they're off to a pretty good start getting guys like Jackson and Tayshaun Gibson. They signed Chris Ivory as well for, I think, $6 million a year. They know that they have the money to spend, and this is a make-or-break year for Gus Bradley, so they've got to start making a push and start winning some games. So starting with Malik Jackson to kind of build that D-line around is definitely a good start, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I'm a big fan of what the Jags have done this free agency period. It's one thing to spend a lot of money. It's another thing to spend it correctly. And it's really difficult to know who spent it correctly. Because sometimes, injuries are there that we don't know about. Sometimes guys just break down and have bad luck. So at face value, which is all we can really work off of here, I like these fits quite a bit from what we've seen from the Jaguars. Malik Jackson, they paid him really well. I mean, I'll put it that way. They paid a premium for a guy who he fits into their defense, but they're going to have to play him a little bit at a position that he's not really the best at. They can play him at like a five technique, which would be, you know, normally like a 3-4 end. That's where he starred for Denver. That's usually where they played Sean Derek Marks, and Marks has dealt with injuries and hasn't been the same since tearing his knee to shreds, which is why you don't ever assume that guys will always come back from a major knee injury. But, you know, as far as that fit, I'm not sure if that fit is perfect, but you can make it work. You can make him you can let him be productive. He's a really solid player. They're in a make or break year, and you combine Malik Jackson with Tashawn Gibson. Gibson's a stud at safety. They desperately needed a free safety, and he is a really good one. So all of a sudden now, Chris Ivory, I like that pickup. Again, is he going to displace TJ Yeldon? Yeah, probably. I mean, but you need two backs. You need two backs in today's NFL. You don't just have one, unless if you've got Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley. So they don't. They don't have that guy. So I'm perfectly fine with this. They had the money. It doesn't matter. The money doesn't matter to them. They were able to lock these guys into basically 2 and 3 year deals. They're going to be able to get out of these contracts in 3 years if they want. And they're not going to need to for Malik Jackson or Tashawn Gibson because they're so young. These are guys not even yet in their physical peak. They're going to be there in a couple years, but you know, investing into young players is how you invest. And Ivory's a guy, he's probably got 1 or 2 years, and then we might see a drop-off. But he's a really good football player right now. So they are definitely a big winner for me in free agency so far.
You mentioned Olivier Vernon earlier, how you know, obviously the Dolphins lost him. Boy, did the Giants open up the checkbook for Vernon, huh? 5 years, 5 years, $85 million. For Olivier Vernon with the New York Giants. The interesting thing about this move, too, I thought, was that the Dolphins rescinded the transition tag on Vernon, which actually now looks good because now the Dolphins can get some compensation next year in terms of compensatory pick in the draft for losing Vernon, which they would not have gotten had they kept the tag on Vernon. I think the Dolphins realized, you know, especially after they signed Mario Williams to that 2-year contract, that they weren't going to keep Olivier Vernon. There wasn't enough room to have Williams, Vernon, and Wake all on the team, and they knew Vernon was about to get paid big time, which he obviously did. So a bit of a swift move to remove the tag, but a bit of a smart move by the Dolphins. As far as the Giants go, they really needed pass rush for sure. But, boy, that's a lot of money to hand out to Vernon. In fact, he ends up getting more money guaranteed than JJ Watt. So, wow. That's all I have to say about the contract is wow.
Yeah, and this is where I'm at with Vernon, and I've talked about this before. I won't go too in-depth, but he's a good player. He is a good player. However, for what he's being paid, and that was my concern, he's not worth it. And so Miami, from their perspective, they pulled the transitional tag so that they could get the compensatory pick. If the Giants would have made that offer, Miami would have been able to decline it, and they would have declined it. They knew a big offer was coming. Once they locked up Mario Williams, they knew it was just a matter of time to rescind the tag because they knew that they needed that pick back, or at least the possibility of it. They wanted the possibility of getting that compensatory pick because remember, it's going to be a third-round pick next year. So it's not just a nothing pick. It's an extra pick Miami desperately needs to rebuild this roster. And so from their aspect, it was a no-brainer decision to let him go. From the Giants' perspective, it's a good fit. They re-signed Jason Pierre-Paul. They signed Damon Harrison, who's a really good nose tackle. We've seen Vernon work with a good nose tackle before in Miami a couple times. He's had a couple good ones, or at least ones that you know have benefited him. To eat up two blockers and to keep him at single blocked, And so if Pierre-Paul is good to go, if he's ready to be a monster defensive end again, then Vernon's going to do well. And now, is he going to be as good as what he's getting paid? No. And that was the whole purpose of my article. And it's not that he's a bad player, it's just he's not going to be worth what he's paid, which will make him a free agent bust eventually, especially if Pierre-Paul isn't good. Pierre-Paul is not who he used to be. It's going to be a huge bust signing. Because Vernon needs someone else to create for him. So I do like what the Giants did. They spent way too much money to do it, but they did get some good players today. They also signed Janoris Jenkins, cornerback from Los Angeles now. But they spent almost $148 million between the two. And neither of them is a top 5 to 10 player at their position across the NFL. So that's concerning to me. Janoris Jenkins becomes the second highest paid cornerback in the NFL. I mean, that's a problem. And this all goes back to Eli Manning. Had they not re-signed him early, then they could have made a decision on him this year. If you're the Giants, and I'll ask you this, Bill, would you rather have Eli Manning and have to spend around $200 million this offseason to help try to build a competitive team around him? By the way, they still have holes at wide receiver, offensive line, running back, linebacker, cornerback.
Safety.
And safety. Lesser extent, cornerback. But would you rather have that problem? Or would you rather have a team that maybe just franchised Eli Manning and traded him for one or two first-round picks this offseason? And then rebuild this team the right way. Now, I mean, I get it. Jerry Reese is fighting for his job, so he wasn't going to do that. But, I mean, from the franchise perspective, it's just, I get that they're trying to go all in. They have to go all in at this point because they re-signed Manning early. I mean, they committed to him for 4 years at $90 million. It's just, it's compounding mistakes. And it's just an issue. It goes back to a mistake a while ago of a team not understanding exactly where they're at in their development.
I would say probably the second option you gave with, you know, franchising and then maybe trying to get some picks, because, you know, when you have to spend so much money in free agency, usually that's a problem, because typically, trying to rebuild through free agency does not work. You know, we've seen, you know, just ask the Eagles how much spending going after, you know, the top prize free agents at nearly every position. Ask them how that works. So I think the Giants, and like you mentioned, Jenkins at $12 million a year is quite interesting. You know, not that Jenkins is a bad cornerback, but again, it comes back to salary cap issues, and they really had a need for the position. So the Giants are in a really interesting position and really trying to dig themselves out of a hole, and really having to kind of throw money at a lot of these players to try to patch up some of these holes. Will it work? We'll see. I am interested in how that defensive line is going to look now. But I don't know. But like you said, there's still so many holes on this team. So I think they still have a lot of work to do, you know, especially coming off, what, another 6-10 season. So it should be interesting what the Giants do moving forward. Who else can we talk about? Just looking at some of the top guys. The Raiders certainly busy, you know, talking about going after top guys, but I mean, the Raiders certainly had money to spend. You know, they were right behind the Jaguars as far as salary cap space. So they bring in Kelechi Osemele, the guard from the Ravens. Well, I don't think he's going to play guard. You don't pay a guard.
I don't know. I think he might.
I guess it depends on if they re-sign Donald Penn.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to. I think that they're supposed to re-sign Penn. And I think he's going to play right guard for him. He's played there before. They kind of reset the market with that deal.
But I tell you what, if they do sign Donald Penn, then, boy, you're looking at a really good offensive line there in Oakland.
Yeah.
With Penn at left tackle, Gabe Jackson at left guard.
Rodney Hudson at center.
Assembly right guard.
And then it's Austin Howard at right tackle.
Yeah.
They could upgrade him, but, I mean, to be honest, you can survive one average to below average tackle. That's okay.
Yeah,
they have a lot invested in that offensive line, so they kind of have to play it fairly cheap at the other position.
Mm-hmm. Then they also went out and signed, and seemingly it was a surprise to everyone because a lot of people are starting to peg him to Atlanta. Bruce Irvin, 4 years, $40 million. So Bruce Irvin, Alden Smith, and Mr. Mack himself. All coming after those AFC West quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I think that they have a good chance of signing Sean Smith as well, a star cornerback from Kansas City. So we'll see if they end up getting him. I know that they're fighting with him with between them and San Francisco. So we'll see if they can end up getting him. But, yeah, they have absolutely done a great job of getting talent this offseason. If they can get that one cornerback, whether it be Sean Smith, whether it be lesser extent Casey Hayward. Hayward's more of like a slot guy than he is a outside cornerback. So we'll kind of see on him. But maybe even like Prince Mukamara, he'd be a solid get as well. So I think they've had a great free agency so far. Reggie McKenzie's done a wonderful job building this team from the draft, and then collecting assets in free agency. They can front pay all of these players. And, I mean, they got really good players. I don't see any issues here potentially moving forward. But you know what? Guess what? If some of these guys get hurt, or if one of these guys gets hurt, if Irvin's not good in 2 years, they're going to be able to cut him. It's no big deal. They're going to have the cap space. And when it comes time, they're going to have to extend Derek Carr. And they're going to have to extend guys. Obviously, Cleo Mack's going to get a ton of money. And so will Gabe Jackson, so will Amari Cooper. But they're in a really good situation moving forward. I love what they've done. I just want them to get Sean Smith now because I'm a big Sean Smith fan.
Yeah, and we talked last week that the Raiders were definitely a team to watch in free agency, and they certainly have not disappointed. So it further cement. I mean, it's really early. Obviously, we're only a couple hours into the league year, but it certainly is kind of help cementing my Raiders' potential playoff pick. I don't know if I'm ready to pick them as division champs just yet. We'll have to see how the rest of free agency and the draft goes. But the Raiders, I think, are definitely going to be a playoff contender next season. So with that, I think we'll take a quick break on the podcast and jump right back in and talk some more players, I think. So we'll be right back.
Gridiron Graduates serves as the premier sports podcast of the Torgo Entertainment Network. To show support to Torgo Entertainment, subscribe to us on YouTube and disable the ad block if you can when you view our videos and listen to our podcasts. It really makes a difference. Check us out on social media as well. Facebook.com/Torgo Entertainment, on Twitter @TorgoEntertains, or TorgoEntertainment.com.
Alrighty, and we are back, folks. Just reminiscing here. At the time of the recording, for those that follow the NCAA tournament, we have a 19-loss team into the NCAA tournament. Holy Cross, the number 9 seed in the Patriot League, ran through, won at Lehigh to win the title. So, I'm one of I'm one of the big proponents that a 16 seed is going to beat a number one seed one of these years. Unfortunately, this year does not look like one of those years because the 16 seeds look like absolute trash. But, hey, you know, it's always fun to see the little guy get into the tournament, even one as bad as Holy Cross. But we'll see you in Dayton.
Yeah, really.
So in any event, let's jump back into some free agent talk. I think the next guy we'll touch on here is another player leaving the Super Bowl champion Broncos, as Danny Trevathan signs a 4-year deal for $7 million per year on average with the Chicago Bears. An underrated signing. I know you're a big Trevathan fan, and he's definitely a very good linebacker. Should help improve a Bears defense that really hasn't been all that great the last couple seasons. So definitely a early, strong signing on the first day of free agency here.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I like what they've done. Trevathan, I feel like he's been linked to them for like months. But it's a smart signing. It makes a lot of sense as far as fit and need, and that's what matters. You know, that's what matters this time of year. The smart franchises get guys that fit their system. It's a seamless fit for them. They're going to run pretty much the exact same thing as Denver as far as what Trevathan's concerned. So it makes a lot of sense. I don't think this is a dangerous signing at all for them, which, you know, you can't say very often for a free agency. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he helps their defense improve. But overall, I think it's just a really sound and it's a good price, too. They didn't break the bank for him, surprisingly. And I don't know, I thought they were going to end up spending a little bit more on him.
So, let's see, some other free agents of note. Doug Martin stays with the Buccaneers, 5 years, $37.5 million. So Jameis Winston keeps his running mate, so to speak, in that offense. It's a good re-signing too. You know, it would have been weird to have another season where a top rusher from the previous season would have left for another team. We saw with DeMarco Murray leaving for the Eagles. But Doug Martin decides to stay, and it was definitely a real nice bounce back season for Martin, and now he gets paid he's getting $7.5 million per year. So solid price, I guess, and good job by the Buccaneers being able to keep one of the key cogs of that offense.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of surprised when I saw this, but overall, I mean, again, you're looking at the overall value of the situation and the fit. I'm a fan of it. You know, I think that, I don't know, it's just some of these moves just happened so fast, it seemed, and it's just like, you know, just need a minute to breathe on him. I feel like this is one of those where it's just like, okay, whew. Like, I don't know. It's one of those ones that kind of slips underneath the radar until I feel like we're going to get to the games on Sunday and it's going to be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, that was a really nice signing by them.
Marvin Jones, who was arguably the top free agent wide receiver on the market, I guess in the move that, you know, was correlated to the Calvin Johnson retirement, the Lions grabbed Marvin Jones for $8 million a year, which at least gives them a solid pair of receivers again. You know, obviously it's not the level of Calvin Johnson, but Marvin Jones paired with Golden Tate, I think, is a very solid 1-2 punch. You know, Jones was never really going to be the top receiver for a team, but he's definitely a very solid number two, and you know, going to the lines now, going to a team, you know, being opposite Golden Tate, so where he's not going to have a lot of pressure on him, I think is going to work well for Jones and in an offense like that. So I thought it was a good signing for the Lions. I think, you know, like I said, they really needed a wide receiver. So good fill in here.
Yeah, I agree. He's almost like the Golden Tate signing all over again, which is interesting because they have Golden Tate. So I'm a fan of him. I think he's going to do really well as like the number two, instead of being like the number three, number four, as he was in Cincinnati. And I think they got a good value here. Again, with inflation, you're going to see these contracts. Some of them are going to be a little bit wonky as far as how they seem. But this one felt right. This felt like the right place, the right fit. And I'm glad to see him go to a situation, especially with Calvin out. He's going to go in there and be able to make a difference right away.
Yeah, so definitely looking forward to seeing how he does there. Just kind of scrolling through some of these top free agents here. Alex Mack leaving the Browns, going to the Falcons. And, well, first let's say, too, what an unfortunate day it's been for the Browns. Sitting back and watching four of their best free agent players walk away to new teams. As Mack goes to the Falcons, we talked about Tayshaun Gibson, or you mentioned Gibson to the Jaguars. Travis Benjamin signed with San Diego, and Mitchell Schwartz, signed with Kansas City. So, not the best day to be a Browns fan. And oh, by the way, they still have Johnny Manziel, who we thought was going to be cut today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not so good right now for the Browns.
I don't know what this franchise is doing. I feel so badly for their fans. It's honestly, this is ridiculous. It's unacceptable that they lost so many guys. They needed to get back. Alex Mack was an acceptable loss. They knew that they were going to lose him. They were trying to get him back, but quite frankly, there's no need. There was no need to get him back. He hadn't been the same guy since he had gotten hurt a couple years ago. So that wasn't the loss that bothered me. The loss that bothered me, obviously, Travis Benjamin. $6 million a year. That is an absolute steal. That is a darn good player. He is going to do great things in San Diego. You look at Tashaun Gibson, $7 million a year. For a budding free safety who's already led the league in interceptions once, 25 years old. Had to get him back. They don't. Mitchell Schwartz, this is probably the worst one. You're talking about 26, 27-year-old right tackle, one of the top few right tackles in the NFL, $7 million a year, which is right in line with his value at the top of the right tackle market. Absolutely ridiculous that they let him go. I don't even know what they're going to do from here. I mean, they're going to bring in a rookie quarterback to this situation. Now, that rookie quarterback's probably not going to play as a rookie, but the reason why they're not going to play as a rookie is because they just lost so much talent. So it's very concerning, and it's just terrible. Like I don't even know what their plan is. They seem to not have a plan, almost as if like they didn't expect other teams to come out strong, or maybe they didn't think that these players would want to return. I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to return, but it's just it's tough, man. You got a culture of losing, and it's hard to break that culture of losing. They should have taken care of these guys a while ago, and not waited until this point just to lose them.
Yeah. So I guess the Browns are going to continue to brown, as we like to say. And another team I want to mention too. I want to talk about the Texans a little bit too, because they were certainly busy today. They signed Lamar Miller, former Dolphin. Sorry, Ian. Although I'm a fan of Jay Ajayi, so I'm sure you probably expected Miller to be gone. I don't think you probably didn't expect him back, especially with a guy like Ajayi waiting in the wings, ready to go for next season.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I'm a huge Lamar Miller fan. I am very sad to see him go. He is a darn good player.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a Pro Bowler next year. He is going to be one of the top few backs in the league next year. Under Bill O'Brien, they've led the league in rushing and finished fifth in the league in rushing the last 2 years. So Lamar Miller is no longer going to be underutilized.
Thank God.
Yeah. He should be a top five pick for you in fantasy.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm not even like a big fantasy guy, but write that in pen. So
yeah, I think Lamar Miller's fantasy value just shot up like a rocket playing in that system.
Absolutely. And you know, so, you're good. I was just gonna say, so you know, I'm very sad to see him go, but in the same sense, I'm happy because I think that he's going to absolutely star for them.
And you mentioned they were fifth in rushing last season, and that was with kind of a makeshift committee, you know, just throwing pieces together, sort of. Guys like Jonathan Grimes, Chris Polk, Alfred Blue, you know, not that they were bad running backs, but, you know, obviously not top-tier caliber either. And these guys helped create a solid rushing attack. Now you throw Lamar Miller in there. He's going to do some work for sure. And of course, Houston filled their quarterback gap. They finally got a semblance of a quarterback, signing Brock Osweiler. Boy, did they give him a lot of money, $18 million per year. But you know what? That's the NFL we live in when these kind of second-tier quarterbacks make a lot of money because, you know, again, we go back to the salary cap always rising, and quarterback is obviously such a premium position. You know, your teams are paying for a quarterback, and in this case for the Texans, they're paying for their starter. But I saw somewhere that it's essentially like a two-year, it could essentially be like a two-year deal because most, if not all, of the guarantees for Osweiler are actually in the first 2 years of the contract. So they could pretty much get out of it almost scot-free after 2 years if he falls apart. You know, and it's not like Denver didn't make an effort to keep Osweiler. It's just that Houston made Osweiler an offer that was out of Denver's range. You know, and
this was expected.
Yeah.
Like, they knew the price. They knew what teams were going to offer. We had seen reports kind of leak out during the combine that this was going to happen, and it did happen. You know, like Field mentioned last week on our podcast, shout out to Field Yates, friend of the show. These things don't happen quickly. Teams know. They know exactly what to expect as far as general range. Now, yeah, you might get an Olivier Vernon that comes in a couple million dollars more per season than what you expect, but for the most part, guys are predictable as far as what the price is for what they're going to come in at. So, you know, it's Osweiler, you know, it's a lot of money, man. It's a lot of money. I get it. I wouldn't be surprised to see them take a chance on Christian Hackenberg in the first or second round because we know that they liked him. And reason being I say that is with that early out in that contract, that would be a really good time actually to make that switch if Hackenberg ends up being who they think that he might be.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, some other free agent pickups I like. Looking at some of these top guys. Brandon Brooks, speaking of the Texans. Former Texan now, as he goes to the Eagles. 5 years, $40 million. Definitely going to help plug up that offensive line for the Eagles.
Great signing.
Pac-Man Jones back to the Bengals. The Chiefs were a bit busy keeping two of their defenders, and Derek Johnson and Tom Bahali. We mentioned Tayshawn Gibson. Just really crazy. I don't know. Any other note? Any other Kobe Fleener signing with the Saints?
That was shocking.
Yeah.
For the price that they paid, that doesn't make any sense.
A little over $7 million a year, the average value of the contract.
That's absolutely insane.
Chase Daniel got a lot of money, for sure.
A little bit surprising. I'm a big Chase Daniel fan, but I'm surprised that they gave him that much.
I actually just saw a tweet saying that incentives could actually push the value of that contract to $36 million, which, oh, by the way, is the same max value of Sam Bradford's contract. And they claim that Daniel is going to get a chance to compete for the starting job. Now, if Chase Daniel winds up beating out Sam Bradford for the starting job, I don't know. We'll see. But I think Bradford does eventually get the starting job. But Daniel's certainly a solid solid backup, and obviously he knows the system coming over with Doug Peterson. So solid pickup, and you know, as we've seen with other teams, one of the most important positions, and certainly one that's not talked about a lot, is the backup quarterback. So at least the Eagles have somebody pretty solid to turn to should something happen to Bradford. At least they don't have to worry about Mr. Butt Fumble anymore.
That's true. I like Daniel. I'm honestly really looking forward to this quarterback battle, as weird as that might sound. I like Bradford and I like Daniel, and I'm interested to see Daniel actually get a chance.
Any other moves that you saw today that you were kind of intrigued by?
Jay Howard obviously re-signing. Getting the information now on Danny Trevathan's deal. He is only guaranteed $12 million, and at $6 million a season, which is crazy. That's a steal for them. So, but that's about it, though. I mean, it's been a really busy day, but overall, I mean, we've seen a lot of the talented guys be picked. And so, interested to see what the rest of free agency has in store for us. But in general, I mean, I think we've seen, I think like it's going to really slow down quickly because it's not a deep free agent class. So,
yeah, a lot of the big names definitely flying off the board in the first day. So you can kind of see things are already starting to slow down a little bit. I think the initial wave has kind of passed. There's a couple others that I've seen now. Rishard Matthews signing with Tennessee. Ladarius Green signs with Pittsburgh, 4 years, $20 million. So, you know, certainly in the wake of the Heath Miller retirement, another retirement after the couple we talked about at the beginning of the show. So that gives them two solid tight ends, I think, because I'm still a fan of Jesse James. But, you know, certainly Ladarius Green's a nice pass-catching tight end for them. A couple others scrolling on Roto-World here. Jeremy Lane back with Seattle. Ron Brooks it's funny too. It feels like the Eagles are signing everybody from Buffalo's defense from 2014. They signed Ron Brooks. They signed Nigel Bradham, which I really like that fit too. I think I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
You know, played very well in 2014 under Jim Schwartz. Now he comes over to Philly. He'll probably be the Sam there. And then, you know, the Eagles also signed Leodis McKelvin. So I think I think the Eagles have done pretty well in free agency so far. And also they brought in Rodney McLeod, who I like. He'll probably be the starter now opposite Malcolm Jenkins. So really the only question right now on defense is who's going to be at corner, probably opposite Eric Rowe. You know, possibly through the draft, we'll see. And then I guess I want to ask quick too, since, you know, we talked about Brock Osweiler going to Houston. It's really weird now to talk about the Super Bowl champions having a quarterback question.
Right.
But here we are. You know, what do they do now that they've, you know, Peyton Manning's retired, Brock Osweiler's in Houston? There are reports that they're looking at RG3. There were rumblings that they may try to trade for Colin Kaepernick. It's going to be... I'm really curious to see what Denver does, since they're now going to have to scramble a little bit.
Yeah, I think RG3 makes a lot of sense, personally. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, makes a lot of sense. Outside of those two, I don't really know who else they can get. I was just kind of eyeing like the quarterback market before this. I don't think that Kaepernick makes a whole lot of sense. I guess he does. I guess he's, I don't know. He's a little bit safer than the other two. And that sounds weird, but, you know, we'll see how it works out. I would probably go for RG3 if I'm them. But I also like RG3, and I know some people don't, but he's definitely a high-risk guy. Honestly, I think Chase Daniel would have been a heck of a signing for them, and probably may have been the best signing for them.
It should be interesting to see what happens going forward. And again, as we kind of get into the second wave, and a lot of these kind of lesser-tiered players, I mean, there's still some very good free agents still out there. Eric Weddle's still on the board. Prince Amukamara is still out there. Sean Smith. Andre Smith. So there's still some solid guys out there waiting to get the call. So, you know, by no means is free agency over. It's obviously just begun, but and especially with the legal tampering period, it certainly helped a lot of these top players get signed really quick. But we're excited to follow along, and you know, we're ready to see what comes next.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, my man. It's definitely a good start to free agency, and should be I'm sure a lot will happen between now and our next show.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I'm sure we'll have we'll still have plenty to talk about next Wednesday, or next week, whenever we reconvene. and certainly by the time we get together next week, the NCAA tournament will actually be underway with the first four. I can't wait for Selection Sunday, so go Tar Heels. Let's see if we can bring home an ACC title. So with that, I think it wraps up another exciting show. I'm just exhausted talking about all these free agents. Another great show as always. Thanks, Ian, for joining me. It's always a pleasure chatting it up with you, my friend.
Oh, it's all my pleasure, man.
So until next time, thanks as always for listening to the show. Go ahead and let us know what you think. And, you know, how you think your favorite team's doing so far in free agency. So for Ian Wharton, I'm Bill Rossetti. Thank you so much, as always, and we'll see you next time right here on GG. Take care, my friends.